This is Audible.
You're listening to the audio production of The Read Aloud Family, Making Meaningful and Lasting Connections with Your Kids by Sarah McKenzie, published by Zondervan and read by the author. The Read Aloud Family audiobook contains additional material not found in the print edition. Stay tuned at the end of The Read Aloud Family to hear bonus audio tracks from author Sarah McKenzie's How to Choose Books for Your Kids learning series. Please note that you may download an accompanying PDF that provides enhanced materials for this audiobook. To download the PDF, please visit https://info.zondervan.com/read-aloud-family-audiobook-pdf/.
For my children, who taught me to love reading aloud. Audrey, Allison, Drew, Clara Jane, Emerson, and Beckett. May stories always bind us in love. And for my brother, who passed on to life eternal while I wrote this book. You are forever missed and loved, Nate. Eternal rest grant unto him, O Lord, and let the perpetual light shine upon him. But the world is a bit short on good fairies these days. So who is to take their place? Who is to make sure that our children's sense of wonder grows indestructible with the years? We are. You and I. Katherine Patterson, A Sense of Wonder. Part 1. The Time is Now. Chapter 1. How Reading Aloud Can Change the World. Or at least, how it's changing mine. No one will ever say, no matter how good a parent he or she was, I think I spent too much time with my children when they were young. Alice Ozma, The Reading Promise. It was just an ordinary Tuesday, really, but it turned out to be so much more than that. I was 20 years old, it had been a long, rainy spring, and the 450-square-foot apartment my husband and I shared was feeling even more cramped than usual. I packed up our one-year-old daughter, an overstuffed diaper bag, and a cantaloupe in danger of turning too soft, and headed out the door. When we arrived at my friend's house 25 minutes later, Christina opened the front door, threw her arm around my neck, and ushered us into her large, cheery home. I breathed a small sigh of relief and dropped the diaper bag by the stairs. Another boring afternoon in our tiny apartment had been successfully averted. Audrey, my daughter, immediately set off, eager to find the toy box. I trailed her, unzipping her coat as she toddled away. Christina's own toddler, not too keen on me yet, returned my smile with a scowl. Christina went into the kitchen to dig through the fridge, and I followed her. We had bonded months earlier over birth stories and coffee at a local playgroup, and I was grateful that even though there was at least a decade between my age and Christina's, we could swap fears and feelings as first-time moms. "Want to keep an eye on the little ones?" she asked. "I'll just whip up a little something for our lunch." I wandered to the family room, keeping watch as the toddlers ransacked the toy bins. Just as I was about to drop onto the deep leather sofa, I saw it. A book resting precariously on the edge of the fireplace mantel, post-its jutting out every which way from the pages. I snatched it up and noted the title, The Read Aloud Handbook by Jim Trelease. If this had been happening in a movie, I'm certain there would have been music. In fact, it would have been the tension-building part of the soundtrack, the part that helps the movie watcher realize that something of great importance is happening, that the rest of the story hinges on this seemingly insignificant moment. At the time, however, all I heard was the babbling of toddlers and the sizzling of the bratwurst Christina was sautéing for lunch. I flipped through the book, noting how many pages were dog-eared, how many were marked up with penciled comments. "What do you think of this book?" I asked Christina over my shoulder. She turned from the stove and leaned forward, squinting slightly to see what I was holding. "Oh, that one? It's great." Turning back to her task, she added, "You can borrow it if you like." This is your cue to raise the volume on the soundtrack. Beyond Compare. I took Christina's copy of the Read Aloud Handbook home, but I didn't so much read it as inhale it. This alone wasn't terribly unusual. I read voraciously as a new parent. I had big, idealistic dreams for Audrey and for myself, for the kind of mother I wanted to be. I knew just enough to realize I had no clue how to do this well, so I did what I had always done when I was shooting for an A+. I read. In those early days of parenting, I rarely made decisions without consulting a book. I read books about what to feed my baby, how to encourage her to nap, what to do for her brain development. The stakes were high, and I was determined to rise to meet them. One dark evening during her first year, Audrey just would not fall asleep. It had become a recurring problem, and fearful that I was to blame for her poor sleeping habits, I gathered up every parenting book I could find. Spreading them around me, I sat cross-legged on the apartment floor and searched desperately for a solution to our bedtime struggles. Audrey crawled around me as I sobbed, flipping from one book to the next, wondering why they all gave such conflicting advice and unsure which one to trust. 15 years and 5 babies later, I wish I could tell my younger self to relax and trust my instincts. Alas, some lessons must be learned through time and experience. But even my desire to end the bedtime struggles paled in comparison to the desire I felt to form a meaningful relationship with Audrey. Jim Trelease's idea that reading with my child could be one of the most important building blocks to a lasting and healthy relationship between the two of us intrigued me. Of all things, I wanted to get this right. The Read Aloud Handbook has sold well over 1 million copies to date, so I think it's safe to say that I was just one of many whose attention was captured by its message. It presented a new idea for me. The primary goal of reading to children, and of teaching them to read, is not so they can eventually learn to read on their own. Trelease's book is chock full of statistics and data that prove reading aloud connects and bonds families and helps kids grow to be successful in just about every area of life, especially in school. In the book, he asserts that read alouds are the foundation for the close bonds between parents and kids, between teachers and students. The 1985 Commission on Reading declared, "The single most important activity for building the knowledge required for eventual success in reading is reading aloud to children." Trelease unpacks this, then tells about the astonishing power reading aloud has to build a child's vocabulary, sow the seeds of reading desire, and help kids continue to love books well into their adolescence and beyond. He proposes read alouds as the antidote to academic struggle. And not just read alouds for kids who can't read yet, read alouds for babies in the womb, for newborns who don't yet hold up their heads, for toddlers and preschoolers and grade schoolers, and even for teens who are quite capable of reading on their own. Trelease advocates reading aloud to kids, especially when they can read for themselves. He goes so far as to say that if teachers and parents experience a shortage of time and can't fit in reading aloud, they should steal time from other subjects that are not as essential as reading, which includes pretty much everything else. The idea that reading aloud should take priority over other things, that even teachers and schools should shuttle other subjects off the schedule to make more room for it, was new to me. As a child, of course, I loved being read to. My favorite part of elementary school was in the first grade during the 15-minute period after lunch recess when the teacher would read to us from Beverly Cleary's The Mouse and the Motorcycle. I looked forward to that read-aloud session every single day. Now, as a brand new parent, reading board books with Audrey was one of my favorite ways to spend time with her. Of all the tasks and responsibilities associated with parenting, reading was the easiest and most enjoyable. That it could be as profoundly important as Jim Trelease asserted both astonished and delighted me. That night, I snuggled in next to Audrey and watched her breathe in and out, little puffs of air catching a wisp of her hair as she slept. I turned the pages of the Read Aloud Handbook, and something deep inside me rumbled. Then, in that moment, I realized my relationship with this child was the most important thing in my life. Nothing else could compare to the bond between this tiny human being and myself. If reading aloud was going to be the best way to nurture that bond, then by golly, I knew what I was going to do. No guarantees. I had high hopes for Audrey right out of the gate. I knew that I wanted her to grow up to love God with all her heart, mind, and soul. I wanted her to do well in school. I wanted a warm relationship with her always. I wanted her to be kind and compassionate, to do what was right even when no one was looking. I also knew that with parenting, there are no guarantees. Kids are not recipes, and just because we prepare them or raise them in a particular way doesn't mean they'll turn out how we hope they will. I've known plenty of loving, all-in parents whose grown children always seem to be running a gamut of mistakes and missteps. Kids are human, and humanity is messy. I knew right there at the beginning that my own mothering prowess wouldn't ensure my children would embrace my Christian beliefs, get into good colleges, or make life choices I would be proud of. In parenting, we aren't guaranteed any of that, but I still felt keenly the desire and drive to give Audrey my very best, to stack the odds in favor of her becoming the kind, capable, and loving person I hoped she would be. All the time and effort it would take to raise her would be worth it, not because it guaranteed good results, but because loving and connecting with her would always be worth my time and effort. Because she was mine. Because she was made by God. Because this was the great task I'd been called to. What I didn't know as I stroked her cheek and considered the trajectory my life had taken at such a young age was that 5 siblings would join her in the next 12 years. Loving and connecting with my kids would become both the greatest challenge and the most thrilling privilege of my life. Parenting would be so very much harder than I could have possibly imagined in those first years, and so much more rewarding. I did know this one thing, even back then. There was a lot I could get wrong. And oh, how I desperately wanted to get it right. My greatest fear. The possibility that one day my children will be grown and gone and I might regret the choices I made while raising them terrifies me. We only have a certain amount of time available to us after all. How we choose to spend that time has significant consequences in that it affects how our children live out the rest of their lives. That's daunting. I'm in the thick of things, and if you're listening to this book, I bet you are too. As this book goes to press, my 6 kids span ages from preschool to high school. Audrey, that toddling girl who accompanied me, a ripe cantaloupe, and a diaper bag on a visit to Christina's house so many years ago, is entering her final years at home. I'm acutely aware of how easy it is to slip into the habit of just surviving the day, focusing on getting through. I want to make a meaningful and lasting bond with each of my kids before it's too late. As a busy mother, I struggle to truly connect with each of my kids in a way that will stand the test of time. There's a whole household to tend to, dinner to make, a pile of laundry always spilling into the hallway. Life feels constantly hurried and overfull. School, work, church, extracurricular activities, sports, family affairs, housework, errands, so many things to do. Emails, phone calls, text messages, so much noise. So much noise. It's just too easy to let these precious childhood years scream by. They are screaming by, and I can hardly stop them. N.D. Wilson words it perfectly in his book, Death by Living. Watching one's small humans age and grow up packs a serious punch. It's like being stuck in a dream, unable to speak, like being a ghost that can see but not touch, like standing on a huge grate while a storm rains oiled diamonds, like collecting feathers in a storm. Parents in love with their children are all amnesiacs, trying to remember, trying to cherish moments, ghosts trying to hold the world. That's me, trying to hold the world, trying desperately to catch the oiled diamonds as they fall. Beyond wanting to do a good job at this parenting thing, I want to enjoy raising my children. I don't want to look back 20 years from now and realize that those active parenting years went by so fast I didn't relish them. I'm terrified I'll wish I had been less distracted and more attentive. I'm afraid I'll come to the realization, when it's too late, that I should have been more present. I'm afraid I'll wish I had enjoyed it more. The days I have to raise my children while they are still under my roof, and the days you have to raise yours, are finite. When you picked up this book, you may have thought you were getting a manifesto on reading aloud. By the end of it, you might decide that's exactly what it is. But right here at the beginning, I want to make sure you know what this book is really about. It's about you and me going all in for our kids. It's about doing what matters most with our time and energy today, right now, right when it matters most, as diamonds rain down and fall through the grate beneath our feet. The Birth of a Revival. Some years after that day at Christina's, I stood on a stool in my kitchen wearing yoga pants, earbuds inserted, scrub brush in hand. Determined to clean out all the kitchen cupboards, I shooed the three kids out to the yard to play with friends while I tackled the silverware drawers and pantry shelves. I was listening to Andrew Pudua, president of the Institute for Excellence in Writing, give a talk called Nurturing Competent Communicators. A friend who heard Pudua speak at a homeschooling conference was inspired, motivated, and filled with fresh enthusiasm and confidence. I had barely begun my own homeschooling journey, but I was already feeling overwhelmed and in over my head. I thought I could certainly use some of that fresh enthusiasm. I listened and scrubbed as Pudua told a crowd of homeschooling parents that the best way to help children grow to be good communicators was to read aloud to them as much as possible and to have them memorize poetry. I wiped crumbs into my hand and remembered the Read Aloud Handbook, inhaled all those years ago. Maybe Pudua was onto something. I already read aloud bedtime stories and school books to my kids, especially to my youngest two, who couldn't yet read anything by themselves. But something about Pudua's talk that day sparked an ember that had lain dormant, buried deep within me. I got to the end of the lecture and started it all over again, vacuuming out corners of drawers and scrubbing honey splatters as I listened once more. This, I thought to myself, there is something about this. Have you ever seen a campfire that has burned down but not been completely tamped out? It looks like nothing is happening, but all you have to do is add a small bit of the right fuel, a scrap of paper, a dry piece of kindling, a tiny blast of oxygen, and that fire roars right back to life. That's exactly what happened when I listened to Andrew Pudua. I began to read aloud to my three children, then ages 8, 6, and 4, more than ever. So startling were the results, so completely transformative were the changes in our family, that 5 years and 3 more babies later, I could barely keep myself from bubbling over with the thrill of it. I had an active blog and had begun to play with the idea of starting a podcast. I loved listening to podcasts myself and thought it might be fun to launch one. In a moment of pure impulse in March of 2014, I shot an email off to the Institute for Excellence in Writing. Would Mr. Pudua like to come talk with me on a podcast about the importance of reading aloud? Within hours, I had received a response from his marketing director. Yes, Mr. Pudua would be delighted to be featured on my podcast. I thought, eyeing my 9-month-old twins as they scooted themselves across the floor. I guess I'd better figure out how to start a podcast. It turns out that how to start a podcast is, in fact, a valid Google search. I ordered a microphone and headset, created a Skype account, and watched an online tutorial about how to edit voice recordings. I marked the day of the scheduled interview with Andrew Pudua in bright yellow highlighter on my wall calendar, but as the day drew closer, I became more and more uneasy. On the day of the interview, my stomach churned. I fired a text to my friend Pam. What was I thinking when I asked Andrew Pudua to be on my show? I don't even have a show. I'm going to be sick. This is a bad idea. It was always a bad idea. Whose idea was this anyway? See, this is where my rash and impulsive enthusiasm gets me. In too deep. Pam responded with just 3 words. You'll be fine. She's heartless. Or I suppose she's used to receiving such texts from me. I'll let you decide for yourself. The interview went better than I could have hoped. So I guess in the end, Pam was right. And Mr. Pudua was a delightful and talkative guest. To this day, I doubt he realizes how terrified I was. A week later, in between diaper changes and never-ending loads of laundry, I released the Read Aloud Revival podcast. I was certain the internet radio show would last for only a few episodes and provide a very small circle of my blog readers with some encouragement to read more with their kids. I could never have imagined in those first days of the podcast that the show would grow to become what it is today. Never dreamed it would see millions of downloads in the first few years and be heard by tens of thousands of families all over the world. As the podcast grew and responses from listeners rolled in, I realized something beautiful. I wasn't alone. Other families had taken to heart this idea that reading aloud could transform their homes, and they had amazing stories to tell about it. Finding other families who were prioritizing books and read-aloud sessions in the way my own family was made my heart sing. Emails began to fill my inbox. Listeners wrote in to tell me that they were reading aloud with their kids and that it had become everyone's favorite time of day. They would say that ever since they started listening to the podcast, they had begun reading together before bed, or at lunchtime, or by listening to audiobooks in the car. Their families suddenly had their own inside jokes, their own shared experiences. It was knitting them together in new ways. They told of their non-reading kids, who were begging for one more chapter, of an energy and enthusiasm in their homes the likes of which they had never seen before. Something big was happening in homes all over the world. A revival was taking shape. In all the conversations I've had on the Read Aloud Revival podcast with experts, authors, moms, dads, and reading enthusiasts, I've come to understand something that both delights and relieves me. Reading aloud with our kids is indeed the best use of our time and energy as parents. It's more important than just about anything else we can do. Reading aloud may seem too simple to make that big of an impact, but the stories I've heard over the years from families all over the world, the data collected by experts, and the personal experience I've had sharing stories with my own six kids has convinced me beyond a shadow of a doubt. Who knew? Well, besides Jim Trelease. It turns out I was right all those years ago when I lay curled up with Audrey, wondering about the mystery of parenthood, about the magnitude of the significant work before me. There are no guarantees. But that doesn't matter. Not really. We aren't going all in for our kids because we are promised excellent results. We're doing it because they mean more to us than anything in the world. When it comes right down to it, we want our children to live out the fullness of God's vision for their lives, and we're willing to do just about anything it takes to stack the odds in favor of that happening. I wish I could go back and whisper a little something into the ear of 20-year-old Sarah, back to that fateful day when I stumbled across the Read Aloud handbook in Christina's living room. I would sidle up next to my new mom self, offering her a latte and a break from the baby for a few hours. Then I would tell her, with a sparkle in my eye and a fire in my belly, pick up a book, pull her onto your lap, read aloud. You will never, ever regret the time you spend reading with your daughter. I finished that first reading of the Read Aloud handbook late at night, long past when I should have been asleep. I turned the last page, put the book down next to me on the bed, and pulled the covers up a little tighter around my chin. Gazing at the ceiling of our postage stamp apartment, I wondered if he was right, this Jim Trelease. Could reading aloud change Audrey's life? Could it truly make such an enormous difference in her future? Was it possible that reading books together could bond us with a shared experience to last a lifetime? My 20-year-old self didn't know the answer yet. I envisioned myself reading to Audrey at 2 years old, at 8, at 12. I pictured myself reading to her at 16. And you know what? I liked what I saw. Two people embarking on a journey hand in hand, seeking adventure, going new places, setting out for the unknown, doing it all together and all through the pages of a book. Mother and child cuddled up on a sofa or sprawled out on the floor, setting out to see what they could experience by reading stories together. I thought about how having such encounters alongside my child could impact both of us forever. I wanted that for Audrey. I wanted that for me. I wanted that for us. As I lay huddled under the covers that night, it seemed to me that Jim Trelease was saying that reading aloud had the power to change the world. What I never could have predicted was how it was about to transform mine. Chapter 2, Waiting for the Walrus, Being Fully Present. So as a mother and as a writer, let me urge you to read to them, read to them, read to them. For if we are careless in the matter of nourishing the imagination, the world will pay for it. The world already has. Katherine Patterson, A Sense of Wonder. It was an overcast day, typical for the Pacific Northwest. Nonetheless, I zipped the three kids into their coats and bundled them off to the local zoo, as was our weekly custom, sun or no sun. Which animal would you like to see today? I asked as we pulled into the nearly empty parking lot. I loved days like this, weekday mornings in early spring with just enough dampness and drizzle to stave off most visitors. Always eager for a change of scenery myself, I gladly accepted the reprieve from being cooped up at home, even with the chill in the air. "The walrus?" 7-year-old Audrey suggested from the back seat. "We haven't seen that one yet." I nodded. A good plan. Gathering up our things, I fished in my wallet for our zoo membership card and led my kids through the entrance. I had seen the walrus before and was eager to watch my children's reactions to their own first encounter with the creature. No matter how often I had seen photos in magazines or watched coverage and documentaries on TV, I was always a little taken aback by the wide eyes of the tiger, the curved trunk of the elephant, the roundness of a snake's belly. I was sure my kids would feel the same sense of awe and wonder today. After all, the first time I had seen the walrus, I was transfixed, wondering how such an enormous beast could move so elegantly through the water. We made our way slowly to the northwest corner of the park, pausing briefly to watch the playful meerkats and peek in on the napping red wolf. By the time we arrived at the walrus exhibit, 5-year-old Allison, always the first of my kids to tire, dropped to the ground and let out a dramatic sigh. The exhibit looked empty, but I knew this was a creature we'd have to be patient to see. The walrus only came to the main viewing area when it pleased. Much of its time was spent in the private corners of its tank. Audrey and Drew kicked stones around on the pavement, and I gladly set down the backpack, which was heavy with water bottles, sketchbooks, and colored pencils. A seagull landed nearby, plucking the remnants of a soft pretzel from the ground. Allison shimmied toward the walrus tank and sat up on her knees, nose to the glass. Then it happened. Rippling water signaled movement within the tank. A smile played at my lips, and I called the other two kids to where Allison and I waited. "It's coming," I told them. "See the water rippling?" We peered through the glass eagerly. Just as the magnificent beast burst into view, Allison cried out gleefully, "Oh, Mommy, look!" I turned to her in expectation, eager to watch her first impression of the walrus's size and grace, but instead saw that she wasn't looking through the glass at all. She was on her hands and knees, nose inches from the sidewalk and eyes open wide in amazement, watching an ant skitter across the ground as it carried a piece of food bigger than itself. In my eagerness to see the walrus, I just about let the miracle of a small, ordinary ant carrying a parcel of food larger than itself pass unnoticed. I am 100% sure I would have missed it had Allison not called the miracle of the ant to my attention. Allison has always been my observer. Quieter than the rest of us, she catches details everyone else seems to steamroll past. She once said, as I was rushing her out the door on a quick trip to the grocery store, "Mommy, slow down. You're moving too fast for my insides." That chilly spring day at the zoo, nearly a decade ago, I saw my slack-jawed daughter watch an ant cross the sidewalk with rapt attention. She heard nothing, saw nothing, noticed nothing. Nothing except for the tiny miracle before her. Oh, how my heart longs to do the same. What matters most? These days of parenting my kids, days filled with laundry, math homework, crockpot dinners, sand on the entryway rug, piano lessons, soccer practice, orthodontist appointments, grocery runs, sleepovers, and toddlers with the stomach flu, these are days filled with ant moments. We aren't making weekly treks to the zoo anymore, but I still find myself waiting for those big, splashy, take-my-breath-away moments. I'm waiting for the walrus. And as I do, I'm missing every other miracle. If you are listening to this book, I bet that you, like me, desire to form meaningful and lasting relationships with your kids. I bet that you, like me, hope that when your kids are all grown up, they'll still want to come home for Christmas. I have twice as many kids today as I did on that overcast day at the zoo, but in some ways, not much has changed. I still find myself waiting for the walrus. I still gloss over the ordinary by default. I'm still plagued by the fear I struggled with so often back then, The fear that I don't have enough time to give my children all that they need, that I'm missing my chance to do what matters most. I feel endlessly distracted by all the other parts of raising kids, and I wonder if, 20 years from now, I'll look back and want to shake myself awake to say, "Pay attention. You're missing this, and it's right in front of you." This parenting gig is exceedingly important. You and I both know that. If making meaningful and lasting connections with our kids requires that we be fully present and that we focus on what matters most, then there's one question we need to answer for ourselves. What matters most? Those myriad distractions aren't going anywhere, so we have to get crystal clear on where our time and energy are best spent. In other words, we have to figure out how to notice those ants on the sidewalk, the tiny, miraculous moments we tend to step right over in search of the walrus. If we can do that, if we can go all in, even while we drive the carpool, cook dinner, order new filters for the furnace, pay the water bill, clean out the garage, and jot down the grocery list on the back of our gas station receipt, then we will be able to look back on these years with fondness and satisfaction. I've learned a thing or two since becoming a parent, and one of the most important is this. Success in parenting my kids means showing up and giving my best to what matters most right now. Which means, of course, that I have to know what matters most right now. Podo Helmer versus Charlie Brown's teacher. My kids were grating on my nerves. It was below zero outside, so I could hardly shuttle them all outdoors. A zoo trip was out of the question. The three-year-old had an ear infection, the newly mobile twins were in the habit of emptying the kitchen cupboards every time I turned around, and we had just returned from a visit with family on the other side of the state. Bloated suitcases lay strewn across the living room. The fridge was nearly empty, as was my reservoir of patience. The entire day had been a battle to persuade the older kids to cooperate, keep the twins from driving me up the wall with their open-and-dump antics, and get the three-year-old's fever down until I could take her to the doctor. You understand, then, that when the older girls ran downstairs and complained that their nine-year-old brother had been sneaking into their bedroom and hiding in the closet yet again, I was absolutely certain I was going to lose it. Exasperated, I slapped down the stack of mail I had been sorting onto the cluttered mess of the countertop. As I did, our most recent read aloud caught my eye. On the Edge of the Dark Sea of Darkness, the first book of the Wingfeather Saga by Andrew Peterson. I stared at it for a moment, an idea rapidly taking shape in my mind. "Mom!" Audrey stood before me, hands on hips. "Seriously, tell him he has to stop sneaking into our room!" 9-year-old Drew whooshed around the corner, but came to an abrupt stop when he saw my displeased expression. "Drew?" I said, using the words that had formed in my mind only a moment before. "Don't be a thwap." A momentary silence filled the room. Then, fits of laughter erupted. Even the girls, irate only moments before, relaxed their shoulders and chuckled. With those four simple words, we were transported to a cottage above the cliffs of Erwiar, watching Podo Helmer chase the pesky, mischievous thwaps from sneaking around his garden. So often in parenting, I picture myself as Charlie Brown's teacher. I'm convinced my kids hear wah, 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 wah when I'm chiding, instructing, or reminding them of something I've told them umpteen times before. "How many times have I told you? Let me explain this one more time. Are you even listening to me?" I could have tossed out any of those reactions, and if I'm being completely honest, I'll admit that I usually do. But the response I get when I launch into the same old, is the same old, glazed over stare. Wah, 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 wah. Instead, this moment, born out of nothing more than exhaustion and a quick glimpse at the cover of the book we'd recently been reading together, allowed us a paradigm shift. No lecture or further explanation was necessary. Drew knew exactly what I meant by "don't be a thwap." Keep out of places you don't belong. Don't be a pest. Don't be a sneak. Any of those commands would have done the trick, but none nearly so well, and certainly none as effective at lightening the mood and giving us all a much-needed chuckle. That time, the story won the day. It broke through the monotony and the frustration. It gave us our own inside joke. Suddenly, life felt lighter. Even in the midst of conflict, we felt more connected to each other than we had been only a few moments before. Score, Podo Helmer 1, Charlie Brown's teacher 0. To be astonished. Most days, I'm overwhelmed by the demands of raising a family. There are endless tasks, laundry, dinner, doctor appointments, sibling squabbles. I'm disciplining, cleaning, organizing, planning, listening, and doling out advice, instructions, and reminders. When the days are long and my energy, not to mention my patience, is running low, I don't have a lot of extra to give. But isn't extra what I need? Extra, so I can make those meaningful and lasting connections with my kids that will stand the test of time. Extra, so that I can lean over and notice the ant skittering across the sidewalk. It is on days like these when the power of reading aloud really shines. It requires so very little of me other than sitting down and reading words on a page. The book does the work for me. Whether we are visiting Podo's garden in Ere We Are, a snowy hovel in Narnia, or Ramona Quimby's cellar on Klickitat Street, a little spark is lit. We all know it only takes a spark to start a wildfire. When my heart longs to connect with my kids but my energy reserves are depleted, a spark is exactly what I need. In our house, whenever anyone says the word fascinating, someone else will interject in the nerdiest voice they can muster, fascinating, simply fascinating. This comes from Kate DiCamillo's hilarious Mercy Watson series, and every time it happens, it catches us a little off guard and makes everyone laugh. It's a single word that triggers a family joke. I hope when my kids are grown, they'll hear the word fascinating, and that fond memory will rise to the surface to warm them, wherever they may be. If you're visiting my house and you need something to write with, you can ask for a pen, but you may as well ask for a frindle. I've done this countless times during tense moments of helping a child with a difficult school assignment, and it never fails to draw out a delightful smirk from my kids. You would smirk, too, if you had read about Nick Allen causing a ruckus and driving one of his teachers up the wall in Andrew Clement's middle grade novel, Frindle. And when one of my young children hollers from their bed, needing one more drink of water or one more snuggle, I quietly recite a page from Anna Dudney's Llama Llama Red Pajama. Llama Llama, don't you know? Mama Llama loves you so. Mama Llama's always near, even if she's not right here. And they remember, without my saying it, that when they have a hard time falling asleep, everything is just fine, even in the dark. The stories we read together act as a bridge when we can't seem to find another way to connect. They are our currency, our language, our family culture. The words and stories we share become a part of our family identity. This is exactly what happened in the family of Clay and Sally Clarkson. Clay and Sally have dedicated their lives to encouraging and equipping Christian parents to raise God-loving kids through their nonprofit organization, Whole Heart Ministries. They have written several books about how they raised their four children in a home filled with stories and read-alouds. Now those four kids are all grown and have moved on to their own lives. We were all together for Christmas recently, the Clarkson's oldest daughter, Sarah, said, and the number of references to stories, it's just a part of the way we speak about life with each other. We share stories. It's what we do. Those stories created a deep friendship between us. Of all the things I want most for my children, true friendship with one another is one of my greatest desires. Sibling arguments can be a painful and tiring experience for everyone involved, and they can make a mother in the thick of parenting wonder if her children will ever learn to get along. My prayer is that despite the inevitable sibling squabbles, my kids will share so many good memories that they'll look back on their childhood and see that it was full of notice-the-aunt moments. Full of thwaps and laughter and little memories they shared with each other as they first discovered Ere We Are, first climbed through the wardrobe to Narnia, took the first bite of every apple in Ramona Quimby's cellar. I hope that some of their best memories will be the times we were astonished at what we saw, what we read, and who we met. astonished at the magic we experienced, astonished at the big, beautiful world and the amazing people we share it with. Astonished. Stories are comfort food. Courtney, a Read Aloud Revival podcast listener, wrote to me about a particularly hard time in her family. Her husband had been out of work, and the financial stress was putting a gray cloud over the family. When would he find work? How much longer could they get by? How could they deal with the stress? Financial strain, of course, takes its toll not only on the parents in a family, but also on the children. Courtney and her husband both noticed that the longer he was out of work, the worse the children's behavior continued to get. "I remember one night, specifically, when the kids were just at each other's throats," Courtney said. "I decided to remove my little guy from the situation and read him a book. We read one book, then another, then another. With each book, another one of my children would join us on the couch until my lap was full. I cannot remember a time when we felt as connected as a family as we did in that exact moment. It was as if all the stressors of life had just vanished, and we could be us again. It was a moment I'll never forget." Author Tish Oxenreiter of TheArtOfSimple.com and The Simple Show podcast recently spent 9 months traveling the world with her husband and 3 young kids. From China to Singapore to Australia, Uganda, France, Croatia, and beyond, they trekked for nearly a year, gaining a unique and rich travel experience. She recounted the adventure in her memoir, At Home in the World. This wasn't their first time traveling internationally with their children, and before they left for this particular trip, Tish said that even as they trek through new countries and continents around the globe, they still make time to read together. Why? "When we're in a new city," Tish said, "we've done nothing but meet new people, eat new foods, have new experiences. And yet at the end of the day, whether in a hotel room or a tent or even on a plane, we can open up If You Give a Moose a Muffin or Blueberries for Sal or some other book we've read 100 times. And it's comfort food. It reminds us this is who we are." Stories are comfort food. Stories are inside jokes. Stories are aunt moments. They bond us together even when life is hard. When we pull a child onto our lap and break open the pages of a book, we're taking them by the hand and walking them into a quiet garden in the center of a noisy, polluted city. We are enveloped by the respite, just for a few moments. We are grateful for one another's company in the garden. And we rise out of the heat of a hard day and seek something better for each other. Enemy Among Us. It had been a wonderful retreat. A weekend filled with twinkle lights, uplifting music, new and deepened friendships, and inspiring speakers. When it ended, 400 moms returned home to their families. I went home to Washington State, and Stacy, a Read Aloud Revival podcast listener, returned to her family in Tennessee. Only a month later, Stacy's family learned that the symptoms her 5-year-old daughter had been experiencing were evidence of an enemy in their midst. The diagnosis? Leukemia. Stacy's entire family was shocked. "I found myself reaching for a book and reading aloud when I didn't know what else to do," Stacy said, recounting hospital stays, endless rounds of blood work, medicine, pain, suffering, and overwhelming worry. "I think read alouds have always been a grounding tool for us, though I didn't fully realize it before," she said. "We'd all get such a sense of peace when we were reading together. It helped us through the hardest parts." I know one thing from Courtney's experience of reading aloud while her family struggled through financial difficulties and from Stacy's experience as they fought back the onslaught of childhood cancer. Their children may not remember the exact stories, plot lines, or characters of the books they shared during these times. Whether they remember the titles of the books they read together doesn't even really matter. But I'm certain of one thing. They will not forget that their mama read to them. They won't forget how the hardest times of their childhood were eased by the sharing of stories, by the opportunity to leave the noisy, polluted city of life and stand for a time in the quiet of the garden with the people they love most of all. I've heard from countless parents that reading aloud has helped their families through the hardships of adoption, illness, emotional struggle, loneliness, and painful separation. When we read with our kids, we step outside the noise, the hustle, the friction, and for just a few minutes, we are completely and totally present with them. That simple act can make even the hardest, most painful season of life just a bit sweeter. Laura, another Read Aloud Revival podcast listener, wrote to me about how her family struggled when her husband deployed. Laura was homeschooling and trying to keep up with laundry, housework, meal prep, and vision and speech therapy sessions for the kids, along with all the other endless tasks associated with raising a family. "I was pouring so much of myself out to my children," she wrote, "but I was still feeling so disconnected from them. There was no lasting joy. I longed for something more in my relationship with my kids." Laura stumbled across the Read Aloud Revival podcast and binge-listened. She began to read with her kids more intentionally and frequently, and she found that reading aloud was about the only time she wasn't stressed. "It became my happy place through those grueling months with my husband gone," she said. "Reading aloud literally saved my relationship with my children. It gave me hope that I could still connect with them even after hard days of constant discipline. All I had to do was read the words on the page." "My kids don't even know how much I love reading to them," she said happily. "They think they are the ones getting the better end of the deal. In my head, I'm just thinking, mission accomplished." Mission accomplished. On that overcast spring day at the zoo so many years ago, I became acutely aware that the small, seemingly inconsequential moments in life are the ones that matter most of all. I also realized they were the ones I'd miss if I wasn't paying attention. Those little moments lined up one after another like beads on a string add up to a lifetime of shared experiences, moments, and memories. They're sustaining and strengthening Courtney, Stacy, Laura, and the legions of families who are enduring hard times. They are, in the end, the moments that matter most. Reading aloud, as simple and quiet and insignificant as it may seem, is a way for us to pause, enjoy, and delight in these kids, in this day, in this aunt skittering across this path. These moments will live on in our children's hearts even when our kids no longer live in our homes. So I ask myself today, why do I seem determined to wait on a walrus when so many aunt moments are here for the taking? Can I make a small and lasting memory with my kids today by picking up a book of fairy tales and reading one aloud? Someday I hope my children are wandering in a bookshop or picking through a garage sale and see the cover of a book of fairy tales. And when they do, I pray that they will remember who they are, where they came from, and to whom they belong. I read aloud to my kids because I know that my years with them are short, because I long for a deep, soulful, real connection with each of them, and because I hardly want to spend these precious years waiting for the walrus, missing every aunt moment while I wait. When my head hits the pillow each night, I want to know that I have done the one most important thing. I have fostered warm, happy memories and created lifelong bonds with my kids, even when the rest of life feels hard. These are moments we will never regret. Even better, these are moments our kids will treasure for the rest of their lives. Chapter 3. Roar of the Lion, Inspiring Heroic Virtue. Aslan threw up his shaggy head, opened his mouth, and uttered a long, single note, not very loud, but full of power. Polly's heart jumped in her body when she heard it. She felt sure that it was a call, and that anyone who heard that call would want to obey it, and, what's more, would be able to obey it, however many words and ages lay between. C.S. Lewis, The Magician's Nephew. Drew was 4 when he first heard the story of George Washington and the cherry tree. I hoisted him, sweaty and smelling of earth and grass, onto my lap one summer morning and read aloud the legend of when George Washington received a hatchet at only 6 years old. The story goes that in his youthful foolishness, George used the hatchet on one of his father's prized cherry trees. He immediately regretted his rash decision, knowing that a whipping was likely coming his way as punishment for carelessly destroying his father's property. When his father approached him about it, the boy drew himself up and proclaimed with bold honesty, "I cannot tell a lie. I did cut it with my hatchet." Surprisingly, George did not get in trouble for his actions. In legendary wisdom, his father declared that an honest son was worth more than 1,000 cherry trees. Drew listened intently while I read the story, then ran out to the backyard to play with his sisters. Later that afternoon, while scrubbing the overflowing stack of dishes from the previous night's spaghetti dinner, I looked through the window above the kitchen sink just in time to notice Drew hacking at my yellow tea roses with a large stick, his little body swinging from side to side in exuberant destruction. I threw the dish rag to the floor, flung open the sliding glass door, and shrieked for him to stop, demanding he tell me just what on earth he was doing. He dropped his stick and turned glittering brown eyes toward me as a wide smile spread across his face. "Ask me if I did it," he exclaimed, proudly pointing at the drooping rosebush. And then I knew. I sank wearily onto the back step. "Did you beat down my tea roses?" I asked weakly. He scrunched up his face and puffed out his chest. "I cannot tell a lie." The gift of practice. A story allows our children to practice living through an experience vicariously. We can't stand next to our children through every hardship they encounter, and we can't shoulder every burden. As Anne Lamott noted in her 2017 TED Talk, 12 Things I Know for Sure, we can't chase after our children with sunscreen and chapstick into their adult years. As they grow and move out into the world, they'll face struggles in work, relationships, and all manner of situations. We can't bear the brunt of it all for them, and we don't really want to anyway. We want our children to be brave, kind, and honest. And how will that be possible if they've never had the opportunity to face fear, unkindness, and the temptation to do wrong? Realizing we can't protect our children from the worst parts of the world, it's almost too much to bear for those of us who love our children desperately, isn't it? Our hearts ache knowing we can't protect our kids from everything. In fact, we can't protect them from anything once they've left our homes. However, we can give them something that will help them. We can offer them something even better than protection. We can give them practice. Lots and lots of practice. Our modern kids don't often have opportunities to be particularly brave, much less perform heroic acts as children. But a child who has been there with Rudy as he struggles to the top of the citadel in Banner in the Sky, has defied odds to prove up her late uncle's claim all on her own with Hattie Big Sky, has romped through the Ozarks with Billy, Old Dan, and Little Anne in Where the Red Fern Grows, that child has lived vicariously through the pages of a book. A child who has heard these stories will have been given practice that will prepare her in a way ordinary childhood could not possibly offer. If a child has read widely, he'll have seen more than he ever would have living in a suburban American town, exploring the streets of a big city, or picking his way through a country field. He'll have lived through all of that and more. He'll have traveled the world and spread lupin seeds over hillsides to make the world more beautiful with Miss Rumphius, tricked the big bad wolf by audaciously rolling down the hill in a butter churn, as in Paul Galdone's account of The Three Little Pigs. He'll have braved a swirling snowstorm and faced his foes along with brave Irene and climbed the ladder to gather the secret ingredient and discovered courage he didn't know he had with Grandma in Thundercake. Teens reading books like the youth adaptation of The Boys in the Boat or Corrie Ten Boom's The Hiding Place will discover true accounts of tremendous heroism. Younger children, even the very youngest hearing fairy tales and fables, face odds and overcome struggles right alongside their favorite characters. Fiction and nonfiction stories provide children of all ages an opportunity to experience what it feels like to be overwhelmed, struggle, fight, overcome, and emerge a hero. To be brave in whatever situations you encounter? To be someone who can be kind? You've lived those hard decisions in your imagination, which is really almost as good as experiencing it yourself. Children's book author Carolyn Laloglu said in an episode of the Read Aloud Revival podcast, when we read aloud, we give our kids practice living as heroes. Practice dealing with life and death situations. Practice living with virtue. Practice failing at virtue. As the characters in our favorite books struggle through hardship, we struggle with them. We consider whether we would be as brave, as bold, as fully human as our favorite heroes. And then we grasp, on a deeper, more meaningful level, the story we are living ourselves, as well as the kind of character we will become as that story unfolds. When we read The Long Winter, we vicariously suffer through long, meager, lonely times and start to understand the true meaning of gratitude. When we read The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, we consider whether we would make the same decision Edmund made to follow the White Witch. When we read Anne of Green Gables, we try on the emotions of impulsivity, imagination, and loneliness, and we experience the depths of despair. When we read Peter Nimble and His Fantastic Eyes, we get a glimpse of what it might feel like to be unable to see, living in a new place surrounded by people we don't know, and charged with a great task. As the character's struggles become our own, Jamie Martin writes in Give Your Child the World, we root for good to win, and we grasp more deeply the story we are writing with our own lives. A powerful story quickens the hero's heartbeat within us. Well-chosen words touch and transform our souls, making us want to become better than we are right now. As parents, there is so much we need to teach our children. There are lessons to impart, wisdom and insight to offer before our kids launch into the world on their own. But a didactic lesson or reprimand from mom or dad will only go so far. There is simply no substitute for story. When it comes to imparting truth to our kids, nagging lectures from an adult simply can't compare with a story whose time has come. A story meets the child where he is. It sparks an authentic desire within him to do better, try harder, and love more. It allows each of our kids a vicarious experience, giving them the precious gift of practice. Stories reach us where nothing else can and quicken the heartbeat of the hero within us. Quickening the heartbeat of a hero. I want my children to know this. Courage is not the absence of fear, but rather it is the boldness to act rightly, even in the face of fear. I can sit my 6 children down and verbally explain this. I can write a definition of the word courage on the board, illustrating that the word comes from the Latin root cor, which means heart, and therefore means to take heart and behave with spirit and pluck when the odds are against you. I can brainstorm with my children ways to demonstrate courage in everyday life. I can suggest they introduce themselves to the new family down the street or stand up for a kid at the park who is getting picked on. I can implore them to show courage when facing a needle at the doctor or a drill at the dentist. That takes courage of some sort, but not the kind that quickens the hero's heartbeat within me. And I'm absolutely certain it wouldn't quicken the hero's heartbeat within my kids. The problem, of course, is that it's a boring and uninspiring lesson. I'm stifling a snore just thinking about it. I don't want my greatest act of heroism to be overcoming shyness or having a cavity filled. I was made for more than that. And my kids? They were too. What if, instead of sitting my children down to the didactic lesson above, I cuddled with them on the couch and began reading the Wingfeather Saga? We'd join the Igaby children in facing the fearsome fangs of Dang, reaching deep within themselves to find what they need to live as crown jewels of Anira, facing insurmountable odds with a tenacity they didn't know they had. We'd lose ourselves in this story and witness firsthand what it looks like to be truly courageous. We'd see that, in no uncertain terms, there can be no courage when there is no adversity, no virtue in staying without the temptation to run away. There can be no honor when there is no opportunity for sin. The courage of a hero starts to beat dimly, slowly, quietly within our hearts, growing steadier and steadier as we walk through the story with Janner and Tink and Lily, as we vicariously live as chosen ones called to a harder and higher path. I once heard Andrew Peterson, author of the Wingfeather Saga, say, "If you want a child to know the truth, tell him the truth. If you want a child to love the truth, tell him a story." We don't want our kids to grow up and face adversity, asking